Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Speaking of America. My name is Jordan Hahn, and I'm hosting the show this evening with Debbie Lynn Molino for Don Manning. And tonight's subject is simply, what would the presidential debates look like in a perfect world? Right now, we've got a debate system which is run by a group called the Commission for Presidential Debates. And basically, the CPD is a privately held corporation that is quite literally bipartisan. It's run by former heads of the DNC and GOP. And since 1988, when it took over for the League of Women Voters, it's kind of closed this debate section down. It's instated things like secret contracts to control who gets access to the debates, what topics are covered, and all kinds of interesting things. And the question, one of the first questions I'm really going to put out there is, should we change back to the League of Women Voters? Can we fix this system as it stands right now? I'm not sure about that. And then I'd really like to talk about so-called third-party candidates and really whether or not they should be included. Personally, I think that the best thing we can do is expand the conversation in this country and actually open it up. But, that's what I'm thinking. So you guys are going to have to excuse me. It's my first time doing one of these call-in shows, so it may take me a little while to actually get the ropes going.
Oh, Jordan, that's what I'm here for.
Thank you, Debbie Lynn.
And we've got the chat room going over here, too, and we've got I'll be interjecting some comments from the Facebook page because we had a bunch of people on the Facebook page tonight weighing in. So we're going to have plenty to talk about.
Now, the Facebook post, we did say, really, what would the debates look like in a perfect world? But at the same time, I'd like to ask anybody calling in to also consider what we might be able to do with these debates, how we might be able to actually affect change in some way to make these things better. Personally, I'd love to see the candidates wearing shock collars and get zapped every time they lie. But
a common comment on Facebook tonight.
I'm not sure we can get away with that.
There was also mention of a trapdoor every time they lied. That was also mentioned, which I thought was amusing as well. But again, like you said, but will it really happen? You know, what can we do to actually make these debates better and more informative? I mean, one of the things that was really interesting to me was supposedly the Committee for Presidential Debates is supposed to make these more informative for the American public, but I don't know that I feel more informed
for being limited to
two choices.
Well, I'd say it's the limiting of the choices, and really what's disturbing about this is I think the essentially secret contract that was made between, what was it, Bush and Gore? I'd have to look this up, but one of these secret contracts from a recent debate was actually released to the public, and it had things in there that the candidates weren't allowed to address each other directly. And I don't know how you have a debate where they can't actually debate.
What are they afraid of? Man. We just, it's certainly not in the style of debating that I learned in school.
No, not very much. I haven't seen any real debate. Even this this last debate, one of the things I found most interesting about it is that it still seemed kind of scripted, and it seemed like, okay, these are our policy points that we've been spouting for months. Mm-hmm. Granted, some of them pivoted, let's say, but it really, there was nothing learned. There was nothing gained from this last debate for the American people. And then it just gets spun out, and what do we get from the spin?
So, well, I mean, what one of the things that I would really like to see in the presidential debates as they come up is I'd really like to see not only this, you know, the so-called third party or alternate party candidates coming in, because I did watch some of that on democracynow.org, which I thought was very informative. And going back over to why they're not included, which I think is a totally bogus reason. But I would really like to see, you know, something substantive and having, like, almost real conversation. Because, I mean, there were so many, like, talking points and statistics and numbers that was bantered about in this last debate that I don't know that it may – I mean, I'm a policy wonk, or at least I follow politics quite a bit. Mm. And the way that they were bandying numbers about – as if each of them lived in their own alternate universe, didn't make sense as to what that would do for me if they were elected president, other than we get to choose which reality we lived in.
I really couldn't agree more. I feel like we'll be doing that a bit. You know, we have the other interesting problem that we run into is that we've got a society these days where the truth and facts seem kind of malleable. Where, you know, I understand there's a separation between an opinion where, let's say, Romney said, in my opinion, Obama's a bad dancer. Okay, you know, that's sure, if people could jump to his defense and say, I have all this evidence, he's a great dancer. But at the same time, that's something that's still open to opinion. Now, on the other hand, saying that he doubled the deficit, that's factually incorrect, and that can be proved. And we actually could have some people there checking these numbers at the debates.
Mm-hmm. I think
the question is, would the parties ever accept it? Would the CPD allow that to go through?
Well, and for their sake, you know, the parties, of course, don't want that there, because if we had live fact checkers, that would, you know, put them, I guess it would put them in a bad spot if their facts, so to speak, didn't check out. Immediately. Mm. So I would love to have fact checkers present at the debate, or at least the truth-o-meter?
Mm-hmm.
So at least, even though it's not impacting necessarily the debate, where we have to wait like the like we do during NFL for the referees to do their to do their check, yeah, because that really draws the game out. But even if we just had a little, you know, something on the bottom of our TV screens that says, oh, well, that's, you know, 40% accurate or not, you know, to give us at least an idea.
I'm just going to jump off to the side and say that if anyone does want to call in, the number is 646-929-2495. And if you do call in and you want to jump in, you've got an opinion or anything you want to talk about, just hit 1 on your line and let us know. We'll get you on the air.
Yeah, definitely. And I've got just a comment in the chat room that somebody doesn't have sound. If anybody else is in the chat room and can hear me, would you please comment so that we know? See if it's just a one-person thing or if it's actually more people in that can't hear us. I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Hmm. Well, then Debbie Lynn, let me ask you this. As far as the so-called third party, I guess a better term would be really other party candidates. Apparently we have 4 of them that have the ability to get from the ballots that they're on to win the presidency, really.
Mm-hmm.
Get the 270 electoral college votes. I have to admit, I've only heard the names of 3 of them. Now, what is this saying about the debates in your mind, and really, what does it say about our media and the service that it does for our country?
Yeah, I've only because of Democracy Now! Do I know who the third one is. I mean, because Jill Stein and Gary Johnson both have tremendous social media outreach efforts going on, and so I've heard of both of them. And then Democracy Now! On their alternate debate last week had, I want to say, Rocky Anderson, thank you, from the Justice, I think it was called the Justice Party.
Yeah.
That spoke, and I had not heard of him before then. So who the fourth candidate is, I don't know.
Apparently, his name is Virgil Good, and he's with the Constitution Party.
Okay. I've heard of the Constitution Party before.
I'm really not familiar with the candidate, but what's interesting is that on October 23rd, at 8 p.m. Central Time, apparently, there's an organization called Free and Equal, which is freeandequal.org, that is hosting a other party presidential debate. And it may be good to just get that exposure for the third party candidates, actually learn what their platforms are for anyone here. I mean, let me put this out to the people who are in the chat room and on with us. How much have you guys heard from the third parties? Do you even care about the third parties? Do you want them involved in these debates?
Yeah, that's an awesome question, because I know that Jill Stein really came into my purview, or into my line of sight, if you will, when I took a little quiz that was out on Facebook there called I Side With. I think it's isidewith.com, not .org.
And I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think I sent it around to a few people. And I was surprised at how much I actually was affiliated with a lot of what Jill Stein believes. And not only that, but finding out that, because they had a lot of either or choices, and then I went, I can't do that. And I went into the more nuanced answers that they had that were behind. It said, you know, look for more answers here. And it did give you at least the option of having something besides the either or easy, you know, that answers like we hear from the Republicans and Democrats. And I think it was because of that, the nuanced answers that you had to actually search for, that it just made more sense to me. And obviously it made me more aligned with Jill Stein. And because I live in Oregon, I have a, you know, if I vote for Jill Stein, I'm not, you know, quote unquote, throwing my vote away, which is another another argument, if you will, for against voting for third-party candidates. And we have a question here in the chat room about why that did the League of Women Voters get out of the debate business. Do you have the answer to that one?
It's kind of a story that goes back to 1980, where really it was I'm looking for this right now, because I want to tell this story entirely correctly rather than my glossing over of it. Pretty much the candidates were a little bit upset about the inclusion of a third party is where it started. And then the following debates, they ran into problems where I believe their proposed moderators were denied or shut down by the two-party candidates 68 times. They couldn't agree on a debate moderator. And the League of Women Voters then lambasted the candidates, and rightfully so. Mm-hmm. And then in 87, they formed this privately held corporation. And they invited the League of Women Voters in 88 to participate in their new rules and this whole system that they set up. And the League of Women Voters said, you know what, this isn't a debate. We want nothing to do with this.
Yeah, they said it's a travesty for the American public and the end of informed voters as we know it, or something to that effect.
Yeah,
I don't know that it was – I'm making that up, but it was something strong.
And I wish that I had the quotes on my other computer just pulled up, and now I'm having trouble finding them. But I will keep digging on this. Because the whole backstory is just really, really interesting.
I would invite one of our callers to look that up for us while we're talking to a caller that we have their hand up.
Yeah. Let's go to area code 661. Let us know your name and where you're calling from.
Oh, I got to turn the mic on.
Mic's on, I think. 661?
Okay.
No?
You have your mute button on. Try again. Nope.
I'm not getting anything. So.
Me either. Okay.
I'll have to go back to mute and see. Maybe they can call back. I don't know.
Right. But, well, it's yeah, we have two people calling in from the exact same phone number, so it might be somebody using a Skype or something like that.
That's the problem, I bet.
Yeah.
Well, let's try turning on the mic on the other phone number. All right. You're on the air now, 661. What's your name and where are you calling from? No?
They're just listeners. They didn't have their hand up, Jordan.
Yep. My mistake. Huh. All right. So this is a little bit more complicated than I was necessarily prepared for.
All right. Well, we're gonna go to the caller who's has labeled himself as one angry Jew.
All right, one angry Jew. You're on the air here.
Did you unmute me?
You are unmuted.
Oh, that's wonderful. Why do you call third party candidates so called? Maybe you can say that again. I kept hearing the words so called and third party candidates together. Why?
Well, I guess I keep referring it to it as a so-called third party because there are actually more than three parties. It's, you know, we've got four different parties that are not the main two parties this time around. So I guess really we have a third, fourth, fifth, and sixth party who are all on enough ballots to win this presidency.
Well, they're on enough ballots. They're not going to get the votes, but they are.
Oh no,
they are real parties. We can start with the Libertarian Party, which has been on the ballot and considered a minor party, not just where they've gotten enough votes and enough votes in the prior elections to be on the ballot. So if they're on the ballot, they ought to be in the debates as well.
I would agree with that. Now, can I ask you before we continue, what is your name?
I am the One Angry Jew.
Ah, well, that's one way to think of it, isn't it?
Well, most people call me Jew.
Jim?
Jew. J-E-W.
Jew.
Oh, my.
Yeah. I have had for the last 2 years the entire Blog Talk Radio calling me that.
All right. Easy enough.
Well, thanks for calling in tonight.
Oh, I'm always on Don's show. I've become a staple of late.
Now, the question is really, if we only have a third party, which party is it? Is it the Libertarian Party or the Justice Party?
Well, the Libertarian Party has been around the longest. The Libertarian Party has gone through the due diligence to get on the ballots. Do you know what they make the third parties do to get on the ballots?
I know that I don't.
Well, they don't.
They don't
make them do. First of all, the Democrats and Republicans don't have to do anything to get on the ballot. The Libertarians have to get thousands upon tens of thousands of signatures, and the Democrats will usually challenge every single page. There's a spot on this page. There's a spot on that page. The two parties, really, I consider them to be one party. The two parties are really the same, and they don't like competition.
Well, of course not. I mean, they've basically rigged the system so that any other party can't get on there.
Well, you know, it's actually different for every state to get onto the ballot, too.
Yeah, but every ballot state access is onerous. Everything that you've got to do to get on the ballot is typically onerous. You have to pay, and it costs money. Most of the time, you have to resort to paying people to go out and collect signatures. And they stand at railroad stations. They go to functions with lots of people, but they've got to collect this. And they're always challenged by the Democrats and the Republicans. They are both the same in that instance. They do not like anybody challenging them. They don't want anybody else up there, and they don't want anybody talking about their own ideas. How dare they when they're the two parties?
So the question that I have is, you know, even given all of that, you know, we have candidates from the Green Party and the Libertarian Party, the Justice Party and the Constitutional Party on most of the ballots across the country. There was something going around on Facebook, and God knows everything on Facebook is true, that shows that there was that you could actually win the Electoral College with 22% of the popular vote.
Okay.
So if that is indeed true, I think it was actually something posted from Upworthy. why would we not want to hear from all six of these candidates in a presidential debate?
Well, typically candidates in the third parties ask questions that the people in the two major parties, the Democrats and Republicans, don't want asked. They'll be asked questions that are fiscally sound. They'll be asked about why we're spending money on this or what's in the Constitution. How did you decide that you were going to vote for this when you were senator or congressman? They'll ask real questions, and they ask embarrassing questions.
So what would be a step forward for us to actually get something, you know, I mean, is what we're doing now by having an alternate debate, you know, a step forward for us?
Well, where is there an alternate debate happening? And who's going to see it?
Essentially, it's Democracy Now! Ran the first alternate debate and did something really interesting where they had it live going on while the actual debate was going, and they would just pause the mm-hmm. CPD's debate and let the third party candidates speak. Now, Gary Johnson from the Libertarian Party was invited to participate in that. He had some other obligation. He couldn't actually do that. And then this organization called Free and Equal is doing the next one on October 23rd. And that'll include Virgil Good from the Constitution Party, Jill Stein from the Green Party, Gary Johnson from the Libertarian Party, and Rocky Anderson from the Justice Party.
You know, this doesn't happen all at the federal level either. This also happens at the state level. I was the chair, the campaign manager for a Libertarian who ran for attorney general. He was not a lawyer. Turns out that in my state, you don't have to be a lawyer to be attorney general. Big surprise, huh? But most of the people that are, they wouldn't let him in the debate, even though he was on the ballot, and even though there were enough votes by the Libertarian candidate that he was the Libertarians were on the ballot as a minor party, meaning that they didn't have to go out and collect signatures to be on the ballot for certain races. But they wouldn't let him in the debate. There were eight people up there. I sent him in there with a bag on his head. He sat in the front row, and he was the unknown candidate. The candidates who were up there couldn't stop laughing for the first 10 minutes of the debate
mm-hmm.
because they would keep looking at him, and he's sitting there with a bag on his head. He got more press after the debate than the candidates who were up on stage. But it shows that the whole system is rigged. And mm-hmm. it's rigged by the Democrats and the Republicans. They, as I said, they both abhor any type of challenge, and anybody else up there, they hate it. When Ron Paul was up there Ron Paul hasn't always been a Republican, he was a Libertarian,
right.
But when Ron Paul was up there, they didn't want Ron Paul talking about the Federal Reserve. You know, how dare we talk about the deficit? And I was going to ask you about that question. Well, so you said that the facts about the doubling the deficit or something like that wasn't correct. What are the correct numbers?
Well, the actual deficit in 2009 was, I believe, $1.413 trillion. And it looks like last year was a little bit less than $1.2 trillion. Now, the debt has gone up by 52%. However, the deficit has actually gone down from when he took office. Arguably, 2009 was actually Bush's debt. But at the same time, that debt has gone down. The deficit has gone down, whereas the debt has increased.
Yeah, how do we deal with that debt? See, this is the kind of question that an independent's going to ask.
Right.
No one's going to really want to talk about that. There's certainly when Ron Paul gets on the stage, he asks about the Federal Reserve, which isn't federal. It's a private corporation. It's not beholden to anybody. They could do what they want. The only thing written in the in the law, not the Constitution, is that when they do something, that after they've done it, that they report back to Congress. And yeah, of course, the president can pick and choose the Federal Reserve chairman, but this particular chairman has been doing the same thing that we've seen in history, buying up the debt. And every country that's done that has failed. Every country mm-hmm. that's done that has imploded their monetary system.
Oh, I don't mean to cut you off, Drew, but
yeah.
we're going to jump callers, I think.
You're about to cut me off.
I am about to cut you off.
Well,
but,
hey, I'm going to cut you off. Don't apologize.
Oh.
And we're going to see if the next caller can answer that question, because I don't have a clue. But
well, I would
like
someone to answer that question. I kind of know the answer to that. I think that there's a fiscal cliff waiting for us, and it depends on whether you want to go slowly towards that cliff or quickly. But you're on a train with insufficient brakes. You are going over the cliff. The only variable is when.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Ju. We're going to jump to the caller.
Sorry about that.
Jumped right in there. Sorry.
That was me. We're going to the caller at 404.
How's everybody tonight?
Doing great. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Robert. I'm calling from Ackworth, Georgia, just outside of Atlanta.
Well, welcome on the show.
Thanks. First time. I'm trying to get more involved. I've done a couple of them, and I'm glad to participate. I might have a more simplified view of this, maybe after long, painstakingly observations and thought process and researches, but, I almost think they just need to eliminate all the parties and just put the names on the ballots and let people run and remove the money from it, and of course I'm saying a lot very simply, but it's all about the money. It always has been. It continues to be. We talk about the parties being left out. Again, the two major parties, the last caller, and you guys are talking about don't want anything involved with it. Well, of course not, because they have control of the money. We have a Congress full of millionaires, even if they weren't before they got there. Citizens United just brought out the money issue to a higher degree to the normal Main Street person, but it's always been that a lobbyist situation there is insane. I actually was very disappointed with our president when he first was elected, when he wanted to put Tom Daschle in his cabinet, because Ted Daschle and his wife, of course, ever since Daschle left public office, and his wife are part of the biggest lobbyist firm in Washington, D.C., for example, and I was glad that didn't go through, and that's kind of the stuff that came out of it, because, of course, he was talking about change and removing the status quo, and yet you're bringing in somebody like that. The money that we have out there is crazy. You walk into a booth to vote. Why do you need to know what party everybody is? Why can't you just go by the name? Why don't the people go out there and earn, your knowledge of them? The basis of merit and what they talk about, et cetera, debate-wise or otherwise. And then, of course, you remove Citizen United, you remove large donations, you really clean up campaign financing from all aspects. When they changed it about a decade ago. They changed it twice in my lifetime that I can think of. I'm 50, major-wise. And what they really need to do is just remove it, leave the donations small. If they got to ride a horse to go to a debate, that's what they got to do.
Let me ask you this. What do you think about the public funding option?
Go ahead.
Just really taking away the ability of anyone or any entity to donate money and just taking it out of a tax pool and giving each candidate a very limited amount of money. Maybe it would drive some of us less crazy because the campaign season would be shorter, but.
Well, it actually works. We have a ridiculously long campaign anyway. Between the fact that, for example, the House, which is only 2 years anyway, so basically when they walk through the door, they're starting to get real, they're working on getting reelected.
Correct.
That is as much a prominent thing that goes on with them as anything. The public funding option, You know, I'm skeptical about any money at this point, but the public funding option is not a bad idea if it's balanced and it's not a lot of money and it shortens our campaign season and makes everybody work harder to get, you know, to get our attention. The money's insane, what's going on. You can't fathom it. It's just insane. And then, you know, you think about deficit and debt, and then you think about the money that's going into this election.
Yeah,
you know,
but
it's ludicrous. I mean, you want to talk about a paradox? So, okay, let's debate about the deficit, and then in the meantime, I'm going to spend $23 million on trying to get my message across. Give me a break.
Can you think about some better uses for that money, or what?
Yeah, just a little bit. Just a little
bit.
Yeah,
just such a few things.
And the party thing, and I agree. I don't believe that. Maybe because we have the black man in office, that the parties have polarized for real in some ways, like they never have before. I definitely will say that, and I totally believe that it is about the black man in office. I totally believe. I just can't get around it. I mean, I live in Georgia, for Christ's sake, and I work in Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. I hear it all the time, and it just annoys me to no end, but it's there. The hatred is real, what's out there. But normally, if you remove that factor, normally, I don't believe there, I've never believed that there's an aisle, there's two sides of an aisle. I mean, they hang out together. You know, I mean, they're always, what you don't see going on is what's really going on. You know, they can go through all the posturing And I mentioned on a show yesterday how our news media is more about giving us their opinion than telling us what's going on. And if we went back to telling us what's going on, maybe we know a lot more about what these guys are really doing and who's in their pocket and, you know, who owns what and where their influence is coming from. And instead, everyone wants to throw in their opinion because it's one big circle jerk that we're going through. And if we don't do something as a people to stop it and make it for our benefit. I was saying yesterday that I can't think of 10 people in Washington that I believe is working for me, period. And that's, I mean, considering how many people are there, that really sucks, you know, and how much money is being spent on us having some of these people being put back in office to determine, I'm not doing okay.
I got another caller lined up here. So if you had one last thought you want to leave us with, what would that be?
My main thought is people, you got to get smart. You got to get propaganda free. You really got to do your research, and you have to make your vote count, and you got to see it through and hold them accountable. I think it's the only way it works. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. And stay with us. You know, we'll try and come back to everybody towards the end of the show. And we're going to move on. Thanks so much for that. We're going to move on to the caller coming to us from area code 607. Your mic is on. Caller from 607.
Oh, hi.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi. I'm actually calling from Facebook. I actually was not listening to the show, but I saw a post from Elizabeth Warren's website saying that this show was on.
Can you give us your name real quick?
Oh, yeah. My name is Mary.
Great. And where are you calling us from, Mary?
Trumansburg, New York.
Awesome. Mary from New York. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, so I saw the question posed was, do you think that the presidential debate should include third-party candidates? And I have to say that I really think that would be great because there's a website that's out there. It's called isidewith.com. And on the website, you go in and you answer a whole bunch of questions about the environment and women's rights and, defense policy and, you know, all these different things. And then it kind of like matches you up with a presidential candidate. And I posted it on my Facebook page because I was kind of surprised with the result that I got, which was that I was more aligned with a Green candidate, Jill Stein,
mm-hmm.
whom I had actually never heard of.
Mary, I have to tell you, the same thing happened to me, and I had to go and do a little research to find out who did the poll, who did the survey, just
yeah,
to make sure
yeah.
it wasn't like, is this rigged by the Green Party kind of thing, because I'm so cynical.
Exactly, and that happened to so I posted on my website, or on my Facebook page, and, you know, somebody said, oh, I think this is posted by Jill Stein, but, you know, when I think about it, I actually think that, and it wasn't that same way for everybody, but, you know, I think that, you know, the third-party candidates may, in fact, be more representative of the American voter than the Democrats and Republicans, you know, in some way. So, you know, if we
yeah.
were to get those people out there more in the public, I think that our democratic system suffers because we only have really, realistically, we only have two parties to choose from.
Well, we think we only have
two
parties. The ballots on almost all the states, the ballots have more than two parties, but the two parties have brainwashed us into thinking we only have two choices.
Yeah, that may be true. You know,
if we had mass rebellion across the country, we actually have more than two choices on all the ballots.
Now, what I want to ask you, Mary, is what do you think the reason is that you hadn't heard about these third party candidates? Is that the fault of the media or the fault of the two-party system? Or really, where do you place that blame in not being able to find that information easily?
Well, you know, I think it's partly the media's fault. I think it's partly the an inherent problem in third parties being able to raise funds to draw attention to their campaigns. But in a way, the media is like free advertising, you know? So, I don't know what the answer to that problem
yeah.
is, you know?
I think, in my perfect world, having been a candidate at a local election, we would have publicly funded elections that where taxpayers would pay, you know, X number of dollars, and we would have small amount of money to go to do mailers and yard signs. The TV stations would be required, because it's public airwaves that we the people give them licenses to.
Mm-hmm.
They pay licensing, but as part of their licensing, they would have to contribute back political time for local, state, and federal candidates, whether that be the debate time or the commercial time, I don't care which it is. And that would be the only advertising that would be out there, and the same for radio stations. So radio and TV time, they would have to give that back as part of their license fees. And that would be it, and it'd be a 30 or 60-day period, and then we'd be done and be over with this two-year campaigning BS, because I'm tired of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, I think we spend way too much money, way too much time on campaigning. And,
I would actually like our elected officials to do the job we elect them to do instead of out raising money all the time.
Exactly.
Wow, that would free up a lot of their time, wouldn't it?
Mark McKinnon,
you know, and... Yeah. You know, and it's kind of funny because, you know, who votes for these third-party candidates is definitely a function of, like, where you live. Because I know people in New York who really don't mind voting, you know, for the Green Party candidate because they know that Obama is going to win the state. But, you know, somebody in Ohio has a totally different take on that. You know, it's like, am I throwing my vote away by voting a third-party candidate? Because really the race is between Romney and Obama. You know, it's kind of sad in a way that, you know, politics has been reduced to this.
Well, what is it this time around? We have a total of 9 states which are actually significant in this election, and the rest of us are all kind of written off. You know, that brings up the question I've seen kicking around a little bit lately about possibly a public, a popular vote as opposed to the Electoral College. You know, is that something that a perfect system would actually take into account? Would that actually make the states all have equal value in the candidate's eyes?
I don't really know, but you know, it certainly is something to consider, because we waste so much money on presidential elections that, you know, it's like, how many people could be fed with the money that is spent on, you know, TV and radio advertising in swing states?
Back into the money here with a second, because I've been following the conversation in the chat box and kind of fell behind it a little bit. But, you know, this CPD that's actually running our presidential debates is actually this year, instead of 10 companies, it's being financed by 7 of them, because 3 actually decided to pull their money. But the biggest funder is Anheuser-Busch. So we just have huge corporate interest in these debates. Now, of course, we've got problems with Citizens United. It's one of my least favorite things to ever go through the Supreme Court. But beyond that, how is it then we're going to get a fair debate from, let's say, corporate interests? I mean, Anheuser-Busch obviously has some interests in controlling some aspect of this debate, or at least throwing enough soft money at both of the candidates to be on their good side.
Right.
Yeah, and I can guess which – well, let me just say, I know which side Coors falls on, having grown up in Colorado. Don't know which side Anheuser-Busch falls on, but But the other thing that we're talking about here, I mean, yes, there are now 7, and thank God 3 of them dropped out. So I guess we can call that progress a little bit. But how, you know, if we want a return to, you know, real debate rather than this dog and pony show, because I don't know what else to call it, that passes for, you know, is a so-called debate that two parties control, where we really have more choices than that in this country. What can we, the people, actually do to bring that about? What do we have the power to do?
Well, I would suggest, first and foremost, that anyone who's interested in changing the debate system checks out opendebates.org. They have a wealth of information. They have the history of the debates and kind of a breakdown of how this system's currently being manipulated. They've been around for a few years now. Of course, Ralph Nader was heavily pushing them several years back. And I will admit I have a Let Nader Debate t-shirt in my drawer in the other room. they've got a lot of information at opendebates.org. Definitely look into that if you'd like to see the debates change. They've made progress. They are more or less directly responsible for the campaigns that got these 3 corporate sponsors to drop out.
That's good.
I'm going to take this opportunity to just say, if you'd like to call in, the phone number is 646-929-2495. And if you'd like to get on the air, you've just got to hit 1 to let us know that. Now, if you had called in before and you want to jump back in, if you press 1 twice, it'll switch that off and switch it back on. Now, Debbie Lynn, let me hit you with another question.
Sure.
As far as these debates go, were you able to get anything of value out of the debate on Wednesday?
This is a little unfair question for me to answer in that I was listening as three different people. So I was listening, one, as a citizen and what's best for the country. Yes, absolutely, first and foremost. Second of all, I was listening as a radio co-host, as a radio show co-host, because we were doing a show on the debate the very next day. And then lastly, I was also blogging on Facebook during the debate. And so I was trying to kind of, and I was moderating my own Facebook page. This is on my personal Facebook page. Between some of my liberal friends and some of my conservative friends, I actually have a Tea Party friend who was pushing back pretty hard, and she was cheering every time Romney scored a point. And so I was listening to the debate doing as three different people simultaneously and blogging. So given that context,
I've successfully put you on the spot.
So just so everybody, so did I hear anything useful in the debate itself? No, I did not. In fact, you can follow my blog on Facebook and you can see that I was completely frustrated 10 minutes in. Myself, the guests that I had in my living room, we all wanted to pull our hair out and scream because there was nothing substantive going on even after the opening statements. And just throughout the whole thing, when we watched people, as we watched both candidates just completely ignore the timer, completely talk over Jim Lehrer. The only thing I can say is Obama did it with a little bit more grace than Mitt Romney, who just completely bullied the whole thing. Just talk statistics that had no meaning whatsoever to everyday life. And each of them with their own set of facts, and nobody to give any context to what any of it had to do. And I follow politics. I'm not like, you know, the person who's just tuning into this presidential campaign for the first time, who I imagine would have been completely lost.
And now, what I noticed is that both candidates told some lies. Now, that might anger some people, but it's true. Both of them.
Yes, they did. They both
were telling some lies. And
yes.
The question is, can we put in a stronger moderator, someone to actually call out candidates on this? If we had fact checkers, could they actually be utilized?
Well, and here's the other thing that needed to happen. Jim Lehrer, as moderator, was not given any power whatsoever. And the candidates had no penalty for going over time or talking over him. None. And since they obviously had no respect for the moderator or the format that they had previously agreed to, the moderator has to have power. So going forward, my suggestion is that the moderator has to have the ability to cut off the mics. Has to. If otherwise, it's meaningless. I don't care if the candidates are not showing respect for the debate format that they've agreed to, then the moderator needs to have some sort of power. And if it's cutting off the mic, it's cutting off the mic. Since we can't do dog shock callers, I thought that was probably like the next most kind, gentle way to say, you're out of time, buddy. Cut the mic.
I'm going to throw this out there to everybody. I'm just curious if you think of this or anyone on the phone or in the chat room thinks of these debates as actual debates. They seem to have gotten away from any kind of debate format and just kind of people speaking general policy platforms and kind of speaking to a public versus to each other. Could we actually make these more of a debate format, or would that be, well, of course, the current bipartisan system probably wouldn't like that. It would put people on the spot. But would that actually have value, or would it just lead to screaming and name calling?
We basically had 90 minutes of talking points and people trying to stay on their talking points. That's, you know, what we had. And I would love to hear some people's. I'm watching the chat room to see if anything pops up there. I should go over to Facebook page and see if we've got anything going on there too. I've been neglecting that. And again, if you want to, if Drew or Robert or Mary, if you guys want to put your hands down and back up again, you just hit one twice and we'll call you back into the conversation.
Yep. This is an amazing adventure in multitasking.
Yes, it is. Yes, indeed. Drew wants back into the conversation here, so I'm going to open up his mic. And now we are. Here we are live with One Angry Jew.
One Angry Jew, you back with us?
You're muted. You muted yourself. We can't hear you.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I did mute myself. I was being nice. But I wanted to jump in and say something about the last caller who was talking about, I didn't even know where he was going with the whole thing with the black man in the White House. But that cuts both ways. I'm a white guy. I'm a white Jew. I was in the YMCA last week standing next to another member. He was black. And we were talking about the politics. And he looked at me and he said, I'm voting for Obama because he's black. Just like that. No other reason. In fact, we talked about some of the stuff, but he said he was voting for him because he was a black man. So while the caller before may have thought that there's a whole bunch of not liking the black man in the office, there's a whole bunch of people who just want him in there because he's black.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we run a country that way?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, I think that's kind of a symptom of a larger problem where we aren't really educating the majority of the voters in this country about what politics and what policy really is. I feel that we have a news media that's largely lazy and really largely sensationalist, and those are their only two goals. If it doesn't bleed, it doesn't lead, and they've got no interest in covering it. So we miss out on actually learning things about policy and about the people who are up for office in this country, and that can lead to kind of uninformed decisions.
Let's take a quick discussion about the NDAA. You know what I'm referring to, right?
It's one of my least favorite things in the world.
Okay, but when I bring it up, and I'm talking to a bunch of, I won't call them conservatives because they're not, they're Republicans, I will be told, we don't like that. But they won't discuss the fact that the Republicans in the House handed Obama the ability to sign the NDAA.
Well, I mean, the NDAA was in existence before this new iteration. This is the fiscal year National Defense Authorization Act. And the big contention on this one is that as of December 31st, 2011, when Obama actually signed it in, it allows for the president to lock up anyone, U.S. citizen or not, without any charges, without any due process, indefinitely. Now, he has made a signing statement that his administration will not use this power, but the idea that it's actually available in the first place is what I believe a direct violation of due process and the rights granted to us by both the Fifth and the 14th Amendments.
Let me stop you right there for a second. You have no right granted to you by the Fifth Amendment or the First Amendment.
Oh.
Your rights exist prior to the creation of that document. That document doesn't speak to you. That document speaks to the government. That document says to the government, you, government, will not infringe on the rights of the citizen. You will not infringe on the citizen's right of free speech. You will not infringe on his right to have his person not searched without due process. It has nothing to say to me or you. It speaks only to the government. And that needs to be understood by people, because if you don't understand how it works, then you come to the conclusion that rights are given to you by the government. And in a sense, when you talk about things like civil rights, which aren't rights, they're created by Congress. Those were given by the Congress to people, but they're not rights. And since they're not rights, they can be taken away as easily as they were given.
I think that, you know, when we're talking about something that's in the Bill of Rights, maybe I chose my words poorly.
No, but your words need to be very careful, because people get the idea that they obtain a right from what's in the Constitution, and that's not true.
Well, we have what some people would refer to as God-given rights, sure. But that's unfortunately not legal grounds to stand on.
Sure it is. That's what the Constitution protects. If you read the Constitution, read the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Third Amendment, it doesn't talk to you. It talks to the government. It was a document created by the 13 original states who created the federal government, who then said to the federal government, okay, we're going to give you certain powers, and these are the powers that we're going to give you. However, we are going to put in here, and we're going to tell you what you can't do. It's a bill of negative rights. It tells the federal government what they can't do up until the 14th Amendment.
Okay, fair enough. But, you know, to jump back to the NDAA now, essentially what everyone has lost is the right to due process, regardless of how that right was granted. That is essentially a moot point. And what's more interesting about the NDAA problem is that a judge who was actually appointed by the Obama administration granted an injunction against this specific language, and the administration itself brought it to another judge in appeals and got that injunction revoked. So we've got some very interesting issues with this one.
Well, you have other issues besides the judge shopping. You have the fact that they're doing end runs around the Constitution. Bush did it too. Bush was not immune. Bush, look, I think there should be a jail cell for Bush, Rice, and the rest of them, as well as for this Obama administration, who has taken the Constitution and just thrown it aside. They're not even paying attention to it. When they want something done, they don't do it. The executive's not supposed to write laws, and yet they're writing regulations. So if the Congress won't do it, they'll write a regulation to get it done. When did we become so lawless? And I'm sorry, Obama, when he was running for president in 2008, told everybody that he was going to get rid of the Patriot Act, and yet he signed it into law, I don't know how many times, three times, four times. He has signed the NDAA where he's got a signing statement in there. But you know what, I'll rent you an apartment, and I'll put a clause in there that you don't like, but I'll tell you, you know what, hey, I'm not going to use that on you. Don't you worry about a thing. That clause, yeah, I know it's onerous, but I'm never going to invoke it. Just sign right here.
Now, I'm going to jump back to Robert now, who's raised his hand again. And, Jew, we'll come back to you a little later in the show if we can. And
hey, guys.
Robert and Georgia, they're back on. Now, what? Where are you in this conversation? I saw that hand come up, and...
Well, I did want to comment. He mentioned one of my comments earlier, and he is correct. There is a large amount of the black population that is doing exactly what he says. My point about raising the issue about the president being black and the polarization that's going on was directed mainly at the disappearance or the reemergence of a true aisle down the center of the two parties. In some capacity, and that's why there's been some lack of compromise, because there is a polarization on the right against him, and I truly believe that the polarization is based upon the fact that, I look at things like the Bertha movement, and I just chuckle to myself on how I call it the Tokyo Rose syndrome when it comes to propaganda. You know, it isn't just about the birth certificate. It's all the other things that go with it. And what amazes me is that none of our elected officials, I would say 95% of our elected officials that are confronted with these questions when the thing comes up, don't do anything to stop it. So, either they say, well, it's not my job to defend the president, which that was a ludicrous statement out of one particular politician's mouth, and all these other comments, they leave it polarized. So the fact that we don't really have two parties, which I totally agree with up there, that they do so many things the same way, is normal course of business. But in this particular case, it's even worse because there are times when they won't even discuss anything with him because of that very reason. And there's without question it goes on to the South. You know, I don't want to get into the white black thing. I mean, I'm 50 years old, and in my lifetime, this country has done so many egregious things in the annals of ethnicity, and the world has, that we could just talk about it endlessly, and it comes from every direction. You know, the human race is pathetic. We've been doing it since Cain and Abel, so it isn't like this is new. You know, we're all about greed and conquering and not being true to our man. You have religious people who don't follow the doctrines, but they say that they're religious. So I try to live a certain way.
Just to jump back on you, what you're saying about essentially our two-party system where these parties are getting very, very similar to each other. I think that you're right in part. I think that the big difference between the parties right now is really, in my mind, on the social issues.
Absolutely. Oh,
I see them as both corporatist parties. And, you know, a lot of people may hate me for that statement, but there's more similar than difference at this point.
Absolutely. Just the amount of lobbyists that they spend time with. I wouldn't care what the issue is. I care about the checkbook that's going in their pocket, or how they're aligning themselves to laws that really aren't best for the country, but is best for them to be early reelected, or however that dynamic happens to be working, or the fact that, you know, people who have committed crimes against this country receive a ridiculous amount of money in speaking engagements. I mean, I can go all the way back to Ollie North and Admiral Poindexter. I mean, are you kidding me? You know, and the money that is shot. Here's a good one. The week of the election, the very week of the election, former President Bush, is going to be the keynote speaker in how to do investments offshore at the Cayman Islands. Are you kidding me? And the money that they're giving him to do it is ludicrous. And the fact that they, you know, I mean, it's just strictly just because he's the president, because he certainly doesn't know anything. You know, so the money is just driving it crazy. But the social issues, there's a big, big, big difference in it. The platforms were indicative of it. You know, some of the things that have happened in the last month or so are indicative of it. It is ridiculous. We have such a portion of our society that wants to tell other people how to live, and then say that if we don't do it this way, they're going to remove our religious rights, which is not what's happening at all. You know, I'm not trying to tell somebody that if they don't make a law that interferes with somebody's right to marry whoever they want, I'm going to make you marry somebody you don't want to. I mean, the conversation is absurd, all of that stuff. You know, the last gentleman was talking about the Constitution, and you know, I have to kind of agree with him on his take of the Bill of Rights, per se. But you know, irregardless of which way it goes, what it says is ultimately that the government cannot make laws that discriminate, period, in any way, shape, or form. That's really what it's all about, from the top to the bottom. We have a country that was founded on religious persecution as much as it was on taxation without representation, and as much as it was not having an avenue to redress your grievances, which is why those things are in the First Amendment. I imagine a lot of people don't even realize that redress of grievances is even in the First Amendment. You know, that's why they're there. Freedom of religion is in there for a reason, as the first one. Freedom of speech is there for a reason, because when they wrote it, the great document that it is, it meant something. These are the things that they had to deal with every single day of their lives and in their history. And we can't back up on that.
So you just brought up something that's like a real hot button for me here, Robert, and that is, you know, is money freedom of speech? I mean, this is how we got
no.
in the whole Citizens United thing.
Oh, jeez, please. You know, I heard Elliot Spitzer say one night that he supported Citizens United because he is such a freedom of speech guy, and I fell out of my chair because the only way that you can say that Citizens United is a freedom of speech thing is if you agree that corporations are people. You know, I gotta tell you something. The Federal Election Commission recently came out with a memorandum, you know, and it's four Republicans and four Democrats on it, whatever that means. So anyway, the four Republicans wrote a memo. Now, I'm a director of operations for a corporation that I have ownership in. And it tells me, as well as it tells the union, so we'll talk about both sides of the aisle. Let's just say, for instance, because of a corporation, I'm on the right. So then you got the unions on the left. We'll just use that for conversational people. It says to both of us equally that we are allowed to tell our employees and our members that they have to participate in the political situation of our choice, of the political debate, or not debate, rally or dinner or fundraising, and we can make them take off of work. And I posted on my Facebook page when I saw it. I didn't post an article about it. I went and found the stupid memorandum and posted it because I didn't believe it when I read the story. And sure enough, they said that. So are they out of their minds? So you not only is my corporation now a person, now I get to order my employees around if I so choose to tell them if I want to tell them they got to go to this person's rally, they have to go. I don't even have to pay them to go. And they can lose a day's work, but they have to go according to what the FEC wrote. We are out of control with what's going on with the corporations I'm out of control. I was so flabbergasted by those two items. Mm-hmm. I'm almost flabbergasted on a daily basis.
Hey Robert, just a quick question. Do you if you have that link and if you're in our chat room, could you post that for the rest of us?
Oh, absolutely.
That'd be great. I'd love to see it.
I'm on Facebook. Oh, let me ask you a quick question. You mentioned earlier about a debate that was happening, I think, on the 26th. What was that again?
It's October 23rd.
23rd,
and
okay.
The debate is going to be the four third party or other party candidates. And the organization running it is freeandequal.org.
That's what I want to know. Okay,
I'll actually paste this in the chat right now too.
Okay, excellent. So I need to go to the Facebook chat thing. Is that what you're saying?
If you post it on the Facebook page, I'll find it there and I'll link it into the chat room here. That's on the. We have some people that are listening to this through online.
Sure. Sure.
And there's a chat room on Blog Talk Radio online, and I'll post it there as well. But if you post it on the Facebook page, I'll find it.
Yeah, I'll go find. I love our timeline now. It takes me forever to find stuff I posted, but I'll find it.
I'm gonna
jump totally
back
there.
That's
I
a
promise.
Whole. That's a that's a different radio show, Robert.
I'm gonna jump back on to the whole Citizens United argument. I actually haven't heard any good arguments for why this should be allowed. And I say that as, I do own a corporation myself. Granted, it's not like some kind of huge corporation, but it seems like a bad idea for me to say, well, I can give money as an individual, but my corporation can also give a lot of money. I don't like this. I don't understand how money has become free speech where, okay, we have the right to free speech, but we don't have the right to money. It seems a very disingenuous argument to me.
Are you aware that the Supreme Court, when that case went before it, the Supreme Court expanded the argument and asked the case to be rebriefed in order to cover this very subject? That's not even what the issue was before the court. They expanded it. I flabbergasted when I heard that. And of course, I look it up to see if I'm being propaganded, and that's exactly what happened. You gotta be kidding.
Yep.
Activism
they
from
did.
The bench. Gotta love it. Gotta love it.
I know. Yeah, gotta watch out for that activism from the bench.
Imagine that. I remember when Ronnie was president and he brought so many judges in, especially going after the drugs. You know, that's when the real drug war started. And he created a whole other circuit. and activism was nuts from the bench for a while there. I don't know. And really, more, I mean, activism has been going on for a long time, and we can go back in history and see a lot of it. I mean, a lot of people can argue that the Warren Court was activist, and they absolutely were, whether you agree with them or not. But, man, you know, sometimes you have to do things. But this what they did with Citizens United and a couple of other these rulings is out of control, and the fact that they're expanding the issue for something that's not before them is definitely not within their power. And the last gentleman that was on the phone was mentioning how the executive is doing it, and he is dead on with that. And that's been going on now since Reagan. And, you know,
yes.
That's a new thing. That is a totally, especially with George Bush, but that is a new thing. He's dead on with that. That's exactly what's going on. The executive has been given a free pass to do whatever they want, and a lot of it really wouldn't even be an issue in the public eye if there wasn't a little bit of polarization going on between the two parties that normally doesn't exist. But Clinton's done it, Bush did it, both Bushes did it, and certainly Ronnie was doing it, and that's pretty much where they got it. They just expanded it, and Congress went along with it, and and here we go.
Well, and this is, and if I must point out, I mean, this is why we have three branches of government, because they're all designed to keep the other two branches in check.
Good old balance.
Mm-hmm. You know, and they decided
not to do it anymore, basically.
And maybe we need to bring Drew back on here to help explain to us exactly what's out of balance now and why it's all so wacko. But it seems to me that, you know, Congress is the one that's pretty weak right now and is not doing their job.
Well, one of the biggest
and that's
problems.
Giving the courts and the executive branches more power right at the moment.
I'd say that one of the biggest problems we have with
I'm sorry. I'm reading the chat room, and yes, Drew would like to jump back in now.
All right. Well, I would actually say that one of the biggest problems we have is that we have this supermajority rule in the Senate, where we now need 60% of the vote to actually get anything passed.
That's not in the Constitution either. Can we get 51? I mean, that's please. That just cracks me up. I totally get that. Yeah.
We've got a very, very powerful president right now. It's the ability for a president to just unilaterally wage war without the approval and necessary vote in Congress is a big problem too, and that's been going on.
Well, that's
for
where
a
that
while.
Executive that's where that executive extension of power originally started from. Basically, that's how all of that got rolling.
And I can tell you why that is if you want.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because we operate under...
Someone needs to tell me.
We operate under war and emergency powers.
Well, yeah, I get that. Yeah, that I get.
But we operate under war and emergency powers, and the Constitution is, for all intents and purposes, suspended.
Subverted. Yes, yeah, subverted.
Now, if you want, no, it's suspended. Now, if you want proof of that, you go find some very old Japanese-looking Americans who can still remember being thrown into concentration camps.
Sure.
And you tell
sure.
me where their right to habeas corpus was.
No, it was suspended.
It didn't exist. In 1933, March 6, FDR closed the banks, the banking holiday. Why does everything sound so wonderful and with frivolity? The banking holiday. We all should take a banking holiday. But what he did was he got the Congress to throw a couple of words out of the Act of 1917, and that's how they referred to it in 1933, the Act of 1917. Do you know what the Act of 1917 was, anybody?
That was the creating of the Federal Reserve, wasn't it?
No. It was the Trading with the Enemy Act.
Ooh,
and what they did in 1933...
So the Espionage Act of 1917, yes?
What they did in 1933 was take out the exemption that exempted United States citizens from being touched by the Trading with the Enemy Act. Trading with the Enemy Act essentially said this. Trading with the Enemy Act said this, and I'll paraphrase it, but this is pretty dead on. If you trade with the enemy, whoever we declare the enemy to be, we can tax you, regulate you. We can use rules and regulations to make your life a living hell. Well, they couldn't do that to American citizens. However, in 1933, they exempted American citizens from that. So you, in a sense, in 1933, became the enemy, as defined under the Trading with the Enemy Act. And what did the what does the government do to you now? They tax you. They regulate you. They write rules and regulations about how you're supposed to live your life, which they don't really have the right to do. But if you have no constitution in force, then what's your alternative? Emergency war powers. In 1972, the Senate wrote a special report, and I have it somewhere. I have to go find it, but the text is on the Internet. The Senate wrote a special report essentially saying this. You, as an American citizen, have lived your entire life, most of you, under emergency rule. And what are these emergencies? Well, 1933, Roosevelt closed the banks. But then that emergency has never been rescinded. The War and Emergency Powers says that after 2 years, these things sunset. Not if they're renewed. We have a new declared emergency by the president from Roosevelt all the way up to Obama. Clinton loved the right emergency war power document. Listen, if somebody had a any kind of hey, something Jude, happened in another country, that was an emergency for us.
Hey, Jude, do you have some links you can put in the chat room?
Yeah, I can go find them, put them in the chat room. But look, you can find them on the White House website, and you can find them for every president. In fact, I have a listing somewhere of every president's executive orders. These are executive orders written by the presidents that say we are in a state of emergency. When we are in a state of emergency, the Constitution's suspended. Simple as that. So if you ever want to know why they act with impunity and why they do what they do and why they make end runs, they're essentially just doing what they need to do because they don't really have anything constraining them. And as far as the comment by the gentleman before me who said that corporations aren't people, yeah, they are. You got to look at the legal definition, not in Webster's. Go look in Black's Fifth, Sixth, Seventh, I think they're up to Eighth or Ninth right now, and go look at the definition of what is a person. A person is a corporation. That is the first definition in Black's. And you can find that whether you go to Bouvier's dictionary or it doesn't matter which legal dictionary you look at. But if you ever want to know what words mean, don't go to Webster's. Because ultimately, if there's some kind of contention about it, it's going to go into court. And what matters not in court is not Webster's, it's the legal dictionary and the legal definition. And you'll find that the legal definitions of things are not the same as what you're used to using. So while you're using a word in day-to-day use, in legal terms, it means something completely different. We, as Americans, are considered corporate persons. And corporations are persons.
Really, if that is the case, then we need to redefine this law.
You can't redefine it. You're operating under war and emergency powers. Look, I listened to a thing where the Jews had had money stolen from them in Europe. And the I think it was the Germans put it in, or somebody put that money when the Jews were exterminated. They took somebody, England took the money and put it into bank accounts. When the families found out that there was money in England in the certain banks, they went to the banks, to the government, and said, we want our family money. And the government, and the British government didn't give it to them. And they cited war and emergency powers as the reason.
Well, I mean,
they declared war and emergency powers. They said, we're keeping your money, we're not giving it to you, and we're citing war and emergency powers as the justification.
Let me pose you this question, and outside of all of the executive orders and war and emergencies, et cetera, do you personally believe that corporations are people, and really, how can we affect change if you have something alternate than the current legal view of a corporation?
Well, corporations are persons, are people. Are not living human beings, because there's a big difference between a living human being and a person. I don't want to be a person. I'm a living human being. However, by the definitions, you have to read the definitions in all of the statutes, and the definitions are different in depending upon which of the Code of Federal Regulations or the statutes you're looking at, depending upon which title. The definitions are different, but we are a corporation is considered a living thing. It lives beyond the person that created it. You created a corporation. When you die, the corporation doesn't die, does it?
But so let me ask you this, because we're talking here. Donna over in the chat room has talked about natural personhood versus corporate personhood, and I've made a couple of jokes here and there about if I really want my voice to be heard, I need to incorporate myself politically. But do we need, because we are a country of laws, and I'm hearing what you're saying, that this is an issue here of the legal definition versus what is a commonly understood definition. And is this just because we've let the lawyers take over this country for too long?
Yes.
And we need to kind of reset everything?
Absolutely, yes.
So now, I'm not sure.
So what about going doing this like move to amend constitutional amendment thing to overturn Citizens United? Will that help us at all, in your opinion?
We don't have. I don't think we have a working constitution in force.
Mm-hmm.
The president writes an executive order and says, "I'm just going to write this, and this is the way it's going to be." Well, all it takes is one congressman to object, but they never do, do they? So why do they allow
executive
to get away? You can call whatever you want. Why do they allow it? Why don't they object?
See, I'm going to take this opportunity to bring this back to the original topic, because we do have a privately held corporation that runs our debates. So really, apparently, in today's legal parlance, we have an individual, a person called the Commission for Presidential Debates, running the show. And it seems that this corporation is just getting more power in these elections. So I'm going to ask again, like in a perfect world, how do we actually fix these debates? How do we get ourselves to really have candidates put on the spot, hold some feet to fires and get actual answers and solutions from these candidates versus just hearing the same old rhetoric bandied about? If you do want to call in and join in on the conversation, our number is 646-929-2495, and hit 1 to let us know you want to join in the conversation. Robert and Drew, you guys are still on the phone. What do you think about actually changing either who is in control of the debates or changing the format of the debates to actually get something more useful to U.S. citizens?
Yeah, I don't have an answer to that. I really don't, because the media is controlled. The media does what, and it's not even what Obama wants or what Bush wants. There's a faction within this government that really runs things, that's there the whole time. I don't believe that this whole Democrat good, Democrat bad, Republican good, Republican bad, it's all there to keep us going and busy so we don't really notice what's really going on.
Now, would you agree that the actual bias of our media is sensationalism versus left or right?
Well, I think the media leans left. I mean, you can't really deny that, but it is sensationalism, and they are.
Well, Jill, I just have to break in here, because all my liberal friends say that the conservatives own the whole damn thing.
I know, and everybody says that Jews own them. I can tell them they don't.
Well, regardless of perceived politics in media, I mean, the truth of the matter is our media here in the United States is owned by five large corporations, who also are five large corporations that donate a lot of money to the two major parties. And they're also looking to make money off of their news. So our bigger problem, as I see it, is that we're getting entertainment instead of news.
We're certainly getting entertainment. Of course we are.
Well, you're getting bread and circus is what you're getting.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, the amount of money that's just put in by sponsorship, you know, and how the fight for the Nielsen ratings goes on, which is, you know, if you go back 30 years, let's say, and then go back from there, you would have such a larger percentage, maybe because there aren't so many of them, but you would have such a larger percentage of true reporters, hound dogs, people who wanted to get to the bottom, whatever it was, than what you have now, and you just have a bunch of people, you have a bunch of weather people who just happen to have different positions and behind the desk. Look good, sound good, say anything that, you know, intelligent people just cannot believe half the stuff that comes out of these people's mouths. You know,
no.
Or themselves. It has to be scripted. It's almost like the reality show thing. You know,
I liken it to worldwide wrestling.
Oh yeah, the WWE.
It's like that. Yeah.
Well, Linda McMahon might be the new senator in Connecticut, and that'll just go right along with it.
But I also believe that the narrative is controlled. There are certain things that are spoken about. There are certain things that the media won't touch. And who is it that's telling them that they won't touch it?
Mm-hmm.
I can give you an example.
Absolutely right about that.
And I can give you a good example of that.
And that is?
You're going to make us ask?
Yes. And that would be the Bilderberg Group.
You're just being a tease. Of course the Bilderbergs can't be touched. But it's all out there on all the conspiracy websites.
It's all out there on the conspiracy websites. But until this year, no mainstream media wrote about it. It wasn't even written about in a local paper. They met the last time in Chantilly, Virginia. They met the time 4 years prior to that in Chantilly, Virginia. It wasn't in any of the local papers, and nobody discussed it except anybody who wasn't mainstream media. So you have two queens and a king come to America on the same day.
In Chantilly, Virginia.
And stay in Chantilly, Virginia. They don't get a White House reception. They don't get a state dinner. This was the Queen of Norway, I think it's the King or Queen of Spain. I can't remember. And Sweden.
So you've got royalty.
You have royalty coming to America that doesn't get reported on. And yet some of your attendees, such as Paul Guigaud, he's the editor of the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not in his paper.
But he's there.
You know,
yeah. Now has Obama been invited to these things yet, or is it still just the upper media and the echelons of banking industry and royalty?
Well, nobody's seen Obama there. But the weekend that they were in town, when he was running for president the first time, and he apparently took the lead from Hillary. That was the day that he sent his press corps to Chicago. There's a video of it with Gibbs, a very angry press corps, wanting to know why the candidate drove off the airport and they're on a plane to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning they drove off the plane, the airport, I guess at Dulles, or it might have been Dulles. I don't know if it was Ronald Reagan. I don't remember which one it was. But they watched him get off the plane, walk to a car, and be driven off the airport. And they wanted to know why. And they were angry. They said, why are we going to Chicago? We've been somewhat kidnapped, or shanghaied, I think it was the term that they used. And yet, everybody said, well, that was the weekend, if you recall, that Obama met with Hillary. He met with Hillary at her house. No, he didn't meet at her house. He met with Pelosi's house. There was all these stories that went around. Well, isn't it a coincidence that Bilderbergs were down that week?
Yeah, so you know, none of us really know. I mean, a few of us on this call probably know who the Bilderbergs are, and have heard the stories and stuff going on about that. And you know, I myself am half inclined to believe it's true, but we don't really know.
You can't call them a conspiracy anymore because the mainstream media did start writing about them this time. But what they wrote about was how all the conspiracy theorists think that they're up to no good. They didn't do anything substantive about the Bilderbergs. Nothing. But they just, all the stories were about how loony the people were who were protesting at the Chantilly Marriott.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're on the Bohemian Grove on there, you know, we could do a pretty wild radio show, you and I.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in this country that's pretty wild.
So, well, let's pull it back to, like, the perfect debate so we can have some of the other listeners follow along with us, and you and I can go off on the Bilderbergs another time. But,
yeah,
but
at
really,
least you know who the Bilderbergs are. They're media, they're magnates of considerable wealth from all over the world. They're kings mm-hmm. and queens. They're representatives of nations all over the world that converge on a city every year, and they meet in secret.
And ostensibly, if there's going to be a new world order, these are the people doing the ordering.
I don't think they are, and I'll tell you why.
Because but I think they're the ones controlling the money.
You know who
they
are. Well, that may be, mm-hmm. but you know who they are. I think the real people who pull the strings are much higher. You won't see their faces. If you're seeing
okay.
the faces of the people who are Bilderberg, these are not really the people doing it.
So back to, you know, so the Bilderbergs aren't controlling our debates. We got the CPD.
How do you know
the
that?
Commission on Presidential Debates.
No, but how do you know they're not controlling
our debates? How about this? Ostensibly, they're not controlling our debates.
I don't know that. The people who are – the question to ask is, are the people in this corporation that are controlling debates, are they Bilderberg attendees, invitees? That's a better question.
You know,
and only
yeah,
when you answer that question can you say that they're not.
Well, okay, I'll grant you that one. I mean, we've got a new caller, and I'm going there right now, Jew.
Run.
As fast as I can. Area code 201. You are
hello.
On the air with us. Can you give
hey,
us your name
guys,
and where you're calling
tonight?
From? We're doing good. Who's this?
Hey, this is Raymond Bass. I'm calling in from New Brunswick, New Jersey. Happy as ever.
Well, you sound really happy. How you? So,
yeah,
what do you have to say about our
night.
Debate?
I had a great night. As about the debate you're speaking about, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Two words: Big Bird. That's what I want to say. First off, you guys, give me your opinion.
Well, I think you would be the perfect moderator.
Does he get a buzzer?
I think that the Big Bird thing was really blown up in our media.
I honestly feel exactly the same way about the Big Bird just being blown out of proportion. It's insane. And with some of these, especially the youth itself, you know, they're like saying, yeah, Big Bird, I grew up with him. Big Bird, he's my hero. No, he's not. Get a real hero.
Maybe you and I are on a slightly different page here. What I'm looking at is the idea of cutting funding for public broadcasting is such major. A small amount of the budget that it's really insignificant. And the people who actually run...
Yeah. Agreed.
The people who actually run Sesame Street said, essentially, we're not dependent upon the public funding, like Big Bird's going nowhere. So all of these campaigns are kind of
a
moot point.
Yeah. You know, well, there's an interesting story, actually. You know, one of my friends, good friends, she's a female friend, she worked in public broadcasting for a majority of her life. She's a very nice woman. She's about 60, 65 years old. She's soon going to retire, and I interned with her when I was a little bit younger, trying to get a job out of college, and, you know, she taught me the ropes about, you know, the insides of the public broadcasting station, and, you know, at a certain point, you know, our relationship got to the point where, you know, she took me back to the apartment, I spread my butt, she said, took a shit on her.
It was interesting. Anyway.
We couldn't go there any farther, sorry about that. That was getting a little bit too graphic for us on Coffee Party Radio.
I
used that tool that we wish that the moderators had at the debates for the presidential candidates. That was
cutting
called the mute button. Cutting off a mic, yes.
I just saw this post from Donna saying that Sesame Street viewing children get better grades and are more likely to read at grade level by third grade. And it makes me think of something really interesting that I saw, imagine this, on Facebook, just talking about public broadcasting and funding. Well, the Learning Channel apparently was a public channel, educational channel at its onset, started by, I'm hoping that this is factually correct, but apparently started by the health department and NASA, and started out doing wholly educational programs, and now is showing Honey Boo Boo as a privatized channel.
I just a real quick tidbit. Somebody was posting something about Honey Boo Boo last week, and I actually like had no clue who Honey Boo Boo was because I don't actually have TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually okay with that. I had to go Google it to find out what it was because I had no didn't know. I'm really okay with not having TV.
Yeah, seriously. I saw it for the first time just yesterday. Just made it through about 5 minutes before I was so horrified I had to turn it off. but you know, this whole public broadcasting thing, in a way, I think that if Jim Lehrer, representative of public broadcasting, had been a stronger moderator, we could have had a much more interesting debate.
He'd been given some tools and some power, you know, I mean, he tried to interrupt. They talked over him, both of them.
Unfortunately, it's the kind of situation where this contract that was signed between Romney and Obama is not going to be available for the American people to read for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
After
right.
these debates are over and done with, after the president's already elected. And we've got some big problems on this one. I'm going to take an opportunity to throw that phone number out there again. It's 646-929-2495, and if you want to call in and jump in the conversation, just go ahead and hit one when you're on the line. I think we'll probably start wrapping this show up pretty soon.
Yeah, probably here in just a couple more minutes. So last chance for calling in. And I don't know that we came to any good answers for how to make the debates, you know, better. I still like the shock collar ideas. The trap doors were interesting. Mute buttons would work on the microphones, cutting the mics off.
Mute buttons would definitely help with moderation. Apparently, the way that the League of Women Voters used to run this, they would have multiple moderators with different political viewpoints and public personas actually running this, instead of just one moderator who, mm-hmm. as we saw with Lehrer, could be overwhelmed and just bowled under by
right.
the candidates. Maybe we can get them back involved.
Oh, God, that would be that would be great to have the League involved again. That would be awesome. I know that they did a good job for a long time. And, Chad, thank you for looking up the Wikipedia on that earlier when the League basically said it was perpetrating fraud on the American people, the way the CPD was setting up the debates. I say we go ahead and call this a night.
All right. Well, thanks for everyone who called in and everybody who tuned in on the chat room tonight. And, you know, hopefully we can find some kind of solutions to make these debates more valuable to us. I would suggest, again, that people take a look at opendebates.org and see really what that organization is about and some of the things that they're proposing to move this forward. And I also would suggest checking out the third party or other party debate that's coming up on Tuesday, October 23rd. And that's run by a group called Free and Equal, with freeandequal.org as their website. The only thing we can do right now, as far as I see it, is educate ourselves, because obviously no one's there to help us.
Mm-hmm. Just a quick pitch and a reminder that Coffee Party Radio is funded only by membership. So if you can go to coffeepartyusa.com and become a member, that would really help out paying for shows like this, because we do have some hard costs that are affiliated with it. And appreciate everybody listening tonight.
And thank you, Debbie Lynn, and thank you, everybody. Have a good night.
I'm going to try and play some music on the way out. We'll see if it works. If not, okay, have a good evening. Sleep well.